Welcome to Horsefly Chronicles Radio with Julia and Philip Siracusa. Sponsored by Carnation. Airing live on United Public Radio Network on 105.3 and 107.7 FM in New Orleans. This show's opening has been produced, edited, narrated by Gwen Luckett at gluckett.com.
Everyone, and welcome to Horsefly Chronicles Radio with myself, Julia Siracusa, and Philip Siracusa. We are broadcasting live from the United Public Radio Network on 105.3 FM and 107.7 FM from New Orleans. We are fully sponsored by Carnation, so we want to thank them for their sponsorship. We love them. You'll have to do a few things in order to participate in chat. Go to our YouTube page, UFO Paranormal Radio. Go to all of our Facebook stations, UFO Paranormal Network, UFO Undercover with Joe Montaldo, News on the Flip Side, and all of our platforms, SoundCloud, Twitch, and Podbeam, and all of those. So thank you, guys. We have another amazing guest to the show. Please welcome to the show Sean Whittington. He is a teacher, author, paranormal investigator, reverend, exorcist, deacon in the United States Old Catholic Church. He is studying to be a Catholic priest. He is also a cast member on Eli Roth Presents the Legion of Exorcists on the Travel Channel. He's also the host of Sean Whittington's Paranormal Ministry Live 2.0. So please let's welcome him to the show tonight. Yay!
Welcome.
A lot of people probably don't know this, but this is like a family reunion. I'm going to consider this a part. Let me see. Phil was on once and he came back. Then he came on with Julia. This is like a part four.
It is. Yeah. You know what? Before we get to all the good stuff, you did remind me, and I forgot, but you did remind me that you were the first show that I've ever been on at all of anything. My first guest appearance, first show, first everything. I was probably a hot mess, but
no. Let me tell people how it went down. I had just started this. I didn't have the vodcast yet. I just had the radio show, and it was very. I hadn't been on the air very long, and so that we're talking late 2015, very early 2015. And I saw Phil. So I don't forget where I saw Phil. So I saw Phil somewhere and said, that guy is going to be a great guest. I got to get him on. So I had a 2-hour show and I brought, I believe the first guest, I should have looked up my records, but I looked, I had a priest on, I believe, an exorcist on hour one. I had Phil come on hour two. By the time I got done talking to Phil, I realized, no, this guy's like a series. I can't even, 1 hour with this guy, that's not going to cut it. So I reached out to Phil shortly after the show, asked him if he'd come back. He graciously accepted. He came back a few months later. That was a great show. 2 hours with Phil left me just going, you know, scratching my head going, wow. That was a great show. And then I started watching you two do other stuff. You guys had a lot going on in your home at the time. I mean, you talk about, you name it, that paranormal investigator came to your home and investigated. Yeah. You name it, and any popular medium at the time who had a team that did investigations were at your home. So I started seeing you, Julia, more and more, and I'm like, you know what? Julia would make a great guest. So I remember reaching out to you first, and you accepted, but you were honest with me and said it would be my first radio show. Would you mind if I came on with my husband? I said, that's an even better show, both of you together as a team. And then you both came on, and that was a great show too. And I saw greatness in you then. And I knew this isn't the last anybody has seen or heard of Julia. And look at us now. I want to, two things. I want to apologize for our paths since that first time we all met haven't really crossed again, but they paralleled.
That's true.
And every time I thought about reaching out to you guys again to have you either on the radio show or my vodcast, you guys were always so busy. You had your series at the time, your online series. You had a lot of things, events going on at your home, things going on. And I was very new to the broadcasting thing too. I would feel uncomfortable reaching. I was booking my own guests. So I would feel, I would look at people first and clock them and see, you know, I don't want to put anybody on the spot. They're so busy. If I reach out to them again, they're not going to want to say no, but they're so busy. I just don't want to bug them right now. Next thing you know, years later, you guys, I couldn't be happier and more proud of the two of you. Have such I'm honored to be asked to be on, and like we go back. We do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a long time, and I can't believe how it's 10 years.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. And we're the three of us are still here doing what we do. You know,
and for the listener out there, you know, I got into wanting to be a guest on other people's shows to learn because we were living in a haunted house and I wanted to hear what the host of shows had to say about listening to other people and taking their knowledge and somehow balancing it into the life that we're living as a family in the home. So, and Sean, I could say that back then your show was very informative, you know, and it rings a lot of bells and it helped out a lot of different areas. So I do appreciate that because these shows are for the listener on knowledge. These shows help. It's not, you know, just for the entertainment of Casper the Friendly Ghost coming through the walls. A lot of families, a lot of people deal with hauntings. It's more known than unknown. And some people have it behind closed doors because they feel like corporate America cannot accept that talk in a workplace. Or you should hush, hush, because maybe you have personal issues and it's really your imagination. Well, no, I can tell the world, as I've always told the world, that paranormal phenomenon does exist. There are things out there that are at play that some things cannot be explained while others can. And Sean, I'm impressed because now you moved up. You are an ordained minister, correct?
Correct. I'm technically right now, I was ordained through a Christian university and Agape Christian University and the Worldwide Society of Exorcists. Having said that, I met Bishop James Long on the set of the show, and after working with him for a couple of weeks, he made me an offer I just couldn't refuse. And that's a total, that's another complete other story, which we can get into also how that happened. But he made me an offer I couldn't refuse to enter the seminary and study to be a Catholic priest. And so I took him up on his offer, and the rest is history. I'm just kind of wrapping all that. I turned the page on everything else and just concentrated on my seminary studies to get to where I'm at now. And I'll be flying to Illinois St. Patrick's Day weekend of this month, where I'll be ordained to the priesthood. So it's very exciting.
Wow. That's great. And Julie and I, we've seen you on a TV show recently. Julie, what was the name of the show?
Eli
Roth presents the Legion of Exorcists, and that's, I'll tell you, that's another, you know, and both of you know this as well as I do. There's forces at work, good and bad, on the other side of the veil that we don't really, can't really comprehend, but I've had many I've experienced many occasions of extreme divine intervention in my life, and that's what this show was. I know you both know Joni Mahan, the author. Yeah. She got a phone call out of the blue one day from some gentleman claiming to be a producer and that he was working on a show about demonic possession and exorcism. Did she know of any exorcists that they should be in contact with to talk to? She said, the only name I could think of was you. So I gave him your number, and I got the call. And this is going back, I want to say 2020. The show came out, I think, what, June last year? So this is before the pandemic. I get the first call. And I thought it was kind of a joke at first, to be honest with you. But then when I realized the guy was legitimate, I honestly told him that I really didn't think it was possible to put on a show about that topic and it not just be silly or over the top or make the church look bad. So I think, I don't know for sure. I'm assuming the first couple of times conversations, I said, I'll give you any help I can, but I'm not interested in, you know, jumping in the deep end with my floaties on and be a real big part of this. But they just kept picking away at me. And every time somebody, some producer or a writer or somebody involved with that production company reached out to me, every person I spoke to was more impressive than the next person or the last person I spoke to. Don't get me wrong. Every person I spoke to was a beautiful human being and just so enjoyable to speak with. I wanted whatever they were going to do. I wanted success for them. But the more I spoke to these people, I realized as they explained how they wanted it to go down and how this was going to be put together, I thought, you know what? This is going to be good. So I didn't really know many Zoom and Skype meetings later and telling a lot of stories. I was actually in the drive-thru at a Del Taco ordering food with my wife. We just ran errands all day long and I was so exhausted. I said, I don't want to go home and cook. I don't want you to have to cook. Let's just stop in a Del Taco right here. I was even too hungry to go drive home, which was a block away. We pulled over and we were eating in the car, in the parking lot. My phone rings and I see it's from LA. I'm like, you know, I better pick this up. I should probably check on this. So I was offered the part, my role in it, while with a mouthful of bean and cheese burrito in the parking lot of Del Taco that day. And the rest is history. You know, it was a really wonderful experience. But the whole time I was wondering, I know there's something bigger at work here. And I don't know why this got laid in my lap, but there's something bigger here. And so I just waited and waited and waited. And after working with Bishop Long for a couple of months, it was either on a lunch break or at the end of a shoot day, he comes walking into our trailer, and I'm the only one in there, and he comes walking in by himself, and he says, you got a minute? And that was kind of an odd thing to say to me. He knows my door's always open to him. So we start talking. He's got this kind of, you know, he's up to something grin on his face. I'm like, what's going on with you? So he says, listen, I just want you to know, after getting to know you over the past couple of weeks, you have a pure heart, and I think you would make a great priest. Have you ever thought about being a Catholic priest? Now, I didn't tell him this at the time, and I didn't tell him until weeks later after I got home, talked to my wife, we discussed it, I made the decision, and I called him. But I didn't want to tell him at that time because there was a lot of paranormal and supernatural things going on while we were filming, too, because we were on location at this almost 200-year-old Catholic church up in the hills in Southern California. So there's a lot going on. When I was a little kid, my mother, may she rest in peace, was the most religious and spiritual person I'd ever known. And she used to ask me all the time growing up, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I would, you know, dumbass kid, I would say things like, you know, policeman, fireman, pro football player, Spider-Man, whatever. She'd say, I think you should be a Catholic priest. And I thought that was just the craziest thing. Like, I just thought my mom, yeah, she's just a whack job. But when he was saying that to me in this trailer, I could see my mother's face on his face. and I could hear her voice coming through his mouth. And the funny thing is, she was Brazilian and had a really thick, heavy accent. This man is talking to me in this female voice with a Brazilian accent. So I knew it was my mother, and I knew that was the reason why I got that show, was for that exact moment there. And wow. This was, who knows, even way before I got that first call before the pandemic, how long that had been in the works. I'm probably thinking this was probably in the works since before I was born. So that just, you know, you put it in terms like that, and it's just mind blowing.
Well, that's great. That was a really good show too, by the way. So congratulations to that. You deserve it. You put your due diligence into the field and what you believe in. Julie, you're going to ask some questions because I got an open form of questions. So if you want to go first before the Phil questions start to come out.
You know, I think maybe some of the listeners want to know, like, how you got started. And
yeah,
you do live in a haunted house now, if I'm
correct. Correct.
But how, like, let's take us back to, like, how it all kind of, like, started for you when you were a kid. Like, did you have any paranormal experiences as a child that kind of made you, you know, investigate and research the paranormal?
Yeah, I was seeing spirits when I was very young, and the only person I could felt that I could trust, that I could confide in, was my mother. And so I would tell her these things, and I still take the same advice, give the same advice to other people today as she gave me back then. She was very spiritual, and I suspect more psychically gifted than she let on. But she would tell me, you're going to see a lot of spirits in your life. They're nothing to be afraid of. They're just people without a body any longer. And if they appear to you, there's a reason. They either have a message for you, or they need help with something. And if you're not so freaked out that you can't compose yourself and ask them, you know, do you have a message for me, or there's something I can help you with? If you just don't want them to bother you, then be honest with them and tell them, you're freaking me out, you're scaring me, please go away, don't bother me any longer. And they will. She didn't tell me about the other things, though, and I would see other things that I knew weren't like your regular disembodied human spirit. And I would confide in her about that stuff, and I think she knew that I was too young to be able to comprehend laying that truth on me. So she would just say, ignore those. Definitely ignore those. But like, I was the type of kid that was always bouncing off the walls. And when I would come home from school, she would say, it's nap time. You know, when you're still that little that they make you take naps. And my mom, I would nap with her. And she'd say, listen, so that the bad things don't come and scare you and get you while we're napping, just, you know, get a nice big handful of my hair and hold on, and I'll get a nice, you know, grip on your leg. So I many, many years later, I look back on that, and I realized there, you know, there was things that she probably, it was good that she didn't tell me, because I probably couldn't have handled it then. But I just started having this weird little passion for investigating the paranormal. I was that weird kid on my Schwinn with the little basket on the handlebars with the little Polaroid in there and a little tape recorder, riding around looking for weird abandoned looking locations where I could go in and take some photos and stuff. And I regret going many, many years not confiding in my friends that I like that do that, because I knew that they would freak out and probably think I was weirder than they already thought I was, and I was concerned about losing friends. So I kept that hidden from a lot of people for a lot of years. But fast forward now, and I meet my wife, who we just celebrated our 20th wedding anniversary. We immediately hit it off, and I knew she had a passion for the paranormal too, and was very sensitive, intuitive. And so we just started out like you two, just kind of trying to help people out, doing a little ghost hunting, a little ghost busting, paranormal investigating. And we worked a case where something there followed us home and took up residence here in the house for about, I want to say 2 months at least. And it was really ugly. My wife and I both came under attack, but she was really the focus of the attack. And I reached out into the paranormal. I didn't know what to do. I reached out into the paranormal community for help. And God bless them. The one time I really needed the help, the paranormal community came through for me, and they introduced me to my then mentor, who is now retired. But she was an ordained exorcist, and she took me under her wing, and she walked me through basically how to battle this thing that was in our home and get it out of here. We were successful, but it came at a great cost. My wife, the healthiest person I knew at the time, didn't drink, didn't smoke, no history of cancer in her family. This attack left her with three very rare forms of cancer, and she wasn't expected to survive that. But, you know, thank you, Jesus, she's still here with us, and we made it through that. But that was a really, really scary, ugly time. But my mentor saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. She said, I think you're being called to this deliverance ministry field, and if you want to continue your training, I'll continue to train you, and we'll get you ordained. I was scared to death, but I said yes because I was watching what my wife was going through. Mm-hmm. I felt bad, felt guilty. I still feel guilty about it, thinking, you know, if it wasn't me dragging her into that situation, she wouldn't have gone through all that. But I wanted to, if that ever happened to us again, I wanted to be ready. And I figured knowledge is power. Training is good. Let me go through this training. But before I got finished, I came under severe attack at a case that I was working. And that was too much for me. I was done. I actually told God, you know, if you're calling me to this, I'm, you know how sorry I am. And I know you love me, but I can't do this. I'm not cut out for this. I'm done. And I walked away for probably a year or more from this field. And then a good friend of mine who was a pastor called me up and needed help with a case. And I said no to her at least a half a dozen times. She caught me in a good mood one day and said, I need your help more than I've ever needed anybody's help on this case. You got to come with me. So I talked to Sharon. Sharon said, go. Yeah, you got to help her. And it was on that case that I had the vision of the Holy Spirit. And I knew that God was telling me, we have your back. I have your back. And you, yes, I am calling you to this. You need to, you know, get back up on the horse, which I did. And I finished my training, my first training to be ordained through this Christian university. But it was right after my ordination. The next case I worked was a very ugly, full-on demonic possession case. And so I knew this was what God was calling me to. But I want people to know I have no magic powers. And it's not me that's helping people. I'm basically there to like draw my line in the sand, put my arm around these people and hold on to them real tight and help them stand up to this bully. And that's putting it mildly, these disgusting creatures that basically paranormal gangsters that want to snuff their life out and end them. I just want to be there and tell them, show them how to fight. But I've been blessed with this discernment to be able to allow the Holy Spirit to come and work through me and take care of these things for me and for my clients. But I have no magic powers. And so the rest is, as they say, history.
Wow. What is a demon to you?
I like, you know me, Phil, I'm an old dude. I like to keep it simple. My mother always told me growing up they were just fallen angels. That's what I keep it. I know who they work for, and I know why they are in hell, and they don't even want to be in hell. And you've experienced plenty of that. You too have experienced plenty of that with your home during the whole height of the Horsefly Chronicles hauntings in your own home. They don't even want to be in hell. So I just keep it simple. To me, they're just fallen angels. They turned their back on God. They tried to, you know, murder God and take over heaven. And they were all thrown down into hell. And I know who they work for, and I know what they're all about. But to me, I just keep it simple. They're just fallen angels.
So they're fallen angels. When you cast them out with the powers that be through you, through the divine, where do they go?
Back to wherever they came from. So I would assume it's hell. I know that we haven't, the war isn't over yet. We're still fighting battles. But when the war is finally won, and we already know who wins, they'll be thrown into that pit and for eternity and locked away. So I think we're not in end times, but we're approaching that. And I believe that they're just really trying to wreak as much havoc as they can until that day comes. Now, they hate us because we were, and hate's even putting it mildly. I can't even adequately put it into terms how they feel about us, but because God chose us over them and we are created in his image and his love for us fuels their hatred for us and why they want to kill us off, to put it mildly. And so where they go is a place where only they go, the damned go and hang out. But it's a very extremely low, and you've even seen it yourself, a very low, dark, low vibrational area on that realm of existence in that dimension. Whereas the opposite side of that coin, way, way, way up there in the heavens, is heaven, which is the high vibrational power of love and light up there is off the charts. We can't measure that, but we do know that when we ascend there, it's just hell we won't even know of that existence because it's just so far removed from our soul and where we will be at that time.
You know, I live in a haunted house and I've talked about demons for years, and a lot of skeptics come out and say, well, prove it, right? And some things you just can't prove beyond an existence of us. Only the EVP recordings through tape recorders and digital recorders. And some people say that pictures are optical illusions and that the actual possession is psychosomatic and power of thought, that the person is implanted upon themselves to act that way based off of a chemical reaction in the brain. And you and the work that you do would say what?
I agree. There is many times where a person is exhibiting signs of a demonic possession, but when you start to peel the layers away and get the person the type of help that they need, I think they all need a psychological evaluation first, and they get that before an exorcism is granted. They get that, so we know. And there's signs that they exhibit different than if they're just suffering schizophrenia or something along that lines. They will exhibit certain things that even that disease can't manifest, which lets us know. The sad thing is, I believe there's many people out there that have been clinically diagnosed with a mental illness and they are exhibiting those signs, but because they're under the care of a physician, sometimes legally we can't proceed. So there has to be some open communication there between the medical professionals and the spiritual professionals like us for that to take place. But I do believe, and I've been in many of these types of hospitals where I've seen people that, and even the staff has said to me, there's something more going on here than just a mental illness. And so I feel bad for them because they can't get the help they need, and they've just been kind of like
we can't foresee, but the people that are being possessed are very much so likely to be the ones with, you know, mental health issues going on. They're the weakest link. We've seen it, and it's what you just said is very, very sad. What do you do? How do you tell the difference for you? How could you tell the difference between someone who's got schizophrenia and someone who's really being attacked
Well, me personally, and I haven't seen the intake form that the United States Old Catholic Church, I'm also a member of the Society of St. Benedict, which is an offshoot of that, from that diocese. I haven't seen their intake form yet, because once I become an ordained priest, I don't think my bishop is watching this. He doesn't know that I've made this decision, because I keep telling him I haven't decided yet. I might just want to be a priest. I just might want to be Father Stu. But I think I'm going to go continue. My wife is on me all the time. They're like, you have a gift. You're being called to this. After going through all of this and becoming an ordained priest, you're not going to continue in the theology and demonology and the exorcism field. That would be not what you're supposed to do. So I will probably continue to pursue that and get better. I'm realizing now, having gone through the seminary, that I probably dodged many bullets. The amount of knowledge that I didn't know is overwhelming. So, having said that, my intake form that I have through Ghost Be Gone, that we've sent out many, many clients, I asked the whole family unit to sit down as a family unit, everybody that's in that house, fill out this intake form. And it may take 3 hours for the whole family to sit down and complete this form. But I've already had a phone interview. My wife has had a phone interview with them. They get the form, they fill it out, they send it back. I read it, my wife reads it, we talk about it. We usually hold another interview. My wife may hold another interview, and then we'll talk again. What do you think's going on here? At the very least, I'm still going to make a trip out there and do a thorough property and home blessing and cleansing and a walkthrough, see what I may see, feel what I may feel, and go from there. I mentioned this gift of discernment. I know that I see things and feel things that I'm only going to see and feel if the demonic are present. So if none of that happens, then I just do what's appropriate and move on. But now I will, comes a time where I'm going to introduce this client to somebody that I know who's a clinical psychologist, a clinical psychiatrist, and have them talk. And then my friends are going to get back to me, tell me what they think. Sometimes they get back to me and say, listen, if your spidey senses aren't going off, this is what I think. And many times they'll get them the help they need if it's truly a psychological disorder that the person is having. But if it turns out to be more, then I go from there. But the exorcisms I used to do were a very Christian-based training form of an exorcism. It wasn't like the Catholic rite, which I'm now reading a lot about and learning a lot about now. But the form of exorcism I was doing before wasn't like the Catholic rite. So if I have to proceed with that, then that's just something that you have to do. But I wake up every morning and pray. I never have to take authority over another exorcism again, because it's a very scary, ugly thing. And the difference between a haunt, and you guys know this, the difference between a haunt and a demonic possession or a demonic infestation is life and death. Ghosts are just, you know, sometimes ghosts get a little poltergeistish, and they may, you know, make some noise and throw some things and do some poking and hair pulling. But when the demonic is present, they're trying to kill somebody. So it's really a matter of life and death. And so that's what makes it so so drastically and dramatically different.
If a person were to move out of the location that was oppressed or / possessed a far distance from the location, would that heal the person?
I hate telling people to move. Have I been guilty of doing that before in the past? Yes. Because I just ran out of all other options. Sometimes these people weren't bothered again. And this is where I'm going to get hate mail for this. Sometimes these people didn't get bothered again because they continued to fight the good fight, keep all their I's dotted and their T's crossed, and walk on the right path and not try and do anything to make themselves a target again. Sometimes these people move away from these locations and they don't. They go right back to doing the same type of things they did, which made them a target. And I just want to warn people now that when these things come back for a second or third round, there's never a third round. If they come back for a second round, they bring friends and it's a lot worse. And usually, no matter how much help they seek out, it usually doesn't end well. So I can't stress enough to people that if you're lucky, if you've been targeted, and God forbid you or somebody in your family is God forbid possessed, and you get through that with the help of somebody like me or the Catholic priests that I know that are exorcists, if you get through that, please, you've got to help them help you. You've got to continue to keep your camp clean and do the types of things that allowed you to experience this divine intervention, which is exactly what it is, that delivered you from the clutches of these things, and you have to change your life. And I can't stress that enough. But moving, usually there's some residual. There usually is some, they follow. They tend to follow, and they continue to watch and wait. And if you make a mistake and do something to let them back in, it's not good.
So let's talk about this.
Sure.
Your information is based off of religion. Now, there's over 200 types of religions, as we know. And it seems to me, I do not disrespect anyone's beliefs or religions. I just want to put that out there. But it does seem to me that the Christians say they have it right. The Catholics say they have it right. The Muslims say they have it right, and so on and so forth. And some religions don't believe in demons. They believe that a person brings it on themselves. Yes, this is true. Where other religions say there is no such thing as a person with abilities to see a ghost, because there are no ghosts, just seeing demons. And you're talking to demons, because spirits do not come here in the physical realm. And as I live in a haunted house with my wife and my family, the question remains, again, this is a very hard question, based off of the religion of what you've learned that helps in these cases. We also have learned, some of us already knew, that in the past couple of years, we're not alone in the universe. As some of our top people from the military have come forward and say, they are interdimensional beings amongst us. These are physicists. These are people with top-notch levels in the government saying we are not alone. We do not know the capabilities of interdimensional beings. Yet, as people that we are, we label entities, demons, ghosts. And I bring these questions up because here at my own home, right, we've had priests, we've had Wiccan, we've had shaman, we've had all walks of life with all respect, only to learn that it doesn't obey the laws of man. It doesn't care at all. When once we thought it did care, it only shed upon us 6 months later. And then we ask ourselves, are we dealing with what we believe and perceive, what we've learned through religion? Is demonic entities, if we believed in heaven or hell, which some religions do not believe, or are these beings interdimensional that can come at will of their own intelligence?
I do believe in ghosts. I do believe many times since I've been doing this that I probably have been fooled. many times thinking that I was talking to a disembodied human spirit. Probably a couple of occasions I can think of where I probably was talking to a demon. And there's times where I thought maybe I was dealing with a possession, and it just turned out to be a ghost, just a real disgruntled, angry, sad, disembodied human spirit. I think I have been fooled before. I also get a lot of calls from people that experience a wide range of stuff, from what seems to be a classic extraterrestrial visitation. Sometimes it's violent. They get, you know, medically abused. Sometimes these alien-like entities are very friendly and take these people on these, you know, these journeys through other dimensions and show them things. Some of these visitations are very sexual, like incubus, succubus. I don't have all the answers. I think that there are a variety of things going on. I do believe also in extraterrestrial life. I believe that there are some that have been here before us. And I believe some have arrived here since that time. Even the Vatican has classes now teaching their priests how to handle first contact. I spoke to an abductee once in Canada who said the first thing the aliens asked him when they abducted him was, "Have you seen God yet?" In my humble opinion, I'm like you, Phil. I don't knock anybody's religion. I think it's all in the eye of the beholder, the holy man. If you're dealing with some whatever he believes in, if he wholeheartedly believes, something about the ultimate faith in what he's believing in helps him help these people. And if they totally buy into where he's coming from and give themselves over to this person for the help, that I think is the biggest thing. It's the power of prayer, the power of faith, regardless of which religion it's in. But it's the person who's trying to do the help, and how the person that's asking for the help is receiving that instruction and receiving that help. I'm thinking of a friend of mine that I knew all my life, and he is no longer with us. May he rest in peace. But I knew him all my life. Didn't die about as diehard an atheist as you could ever imagine. Now, I'm a baptized Catholic, went through confirmation within Catholic schools all the way up to the third and fourth grade. But me and him and I were so, you couldn't ask for a better friend. But now, here he is on the East Coast, dying of advanced colon cancer. Mm. And him and I are talking, when he's feeling up to calling me and talking a little bit, he knows he's short on time. But this is at the height of my wife's sickness. I mean, she was bad. She had tongue cancer, throat cancer, medullary thyroid cancer. It had metastasized to areas in her neck. It was bad. She had a feeding tube in for over a year. There was months where she couldn't even swallow water. It was bad. So this is one of those nights where I'm almost positive. I mean, I just had this feeling. I'm going to wake up this morning sleeping next to a dead woman. I just know that she's not going to survive to morning. It was that bad of a night. So I'm thinking, well, it hit me like a bolt of lightning, something my mother did once when my father was on his deathbed. I went to this all-night prayer chapel around the corner, and I crawled on my hands and knees from the front door to the altar, threw myself at the mercy of the court, if you will, laid there for probably 2 hours talking to whoever would listen, saints, my guardian angels that I believe in, God, Jesus, the whole Holy Family, everybody. Finally, I got this overwhelming sense that it was okay for me to go home now. And here, you know, I've got great faith, but I'm driving home, and I'll admit, I'm like, did they set me up to drive to come home and be okay with finding my wife dead? Is that what this is about? So I'm hesitant, but I get home, I walk in, I had two big mastiffs at the time. They're in bed with my wife. They seem okay. I look in on my wife. I sit there and stare at her for a little bit. She's still breathing. Thank you, Jesus. She's still alive. So what's going on here? You know, I'm just praying away. My phone rings. It's 3 o'clock in the morning. I see it's a back east number. Better answer it. Sure enough, it's my buddy. I just talked to him a couple of days earlier, and he didn't sound good at all. It sounded like I probably wouldn't hear from him again. But this conversation, he sounded so upbeat and so happy. It was really, it took me back. I'm like, why are you, what's going on, Russ? What's going on, brother? He goes, I had to call you. I go, what's going on? He goes, I don't have much time left, but I had to call you. I just saw God, and he told me to tell you that Sharon was going to live and that you needed to continue to fight those responsible. Because I had left the field of deliverance ministry at the time. I was done with it because I'd already came under attack too. And he died shortly after that. But I did get back up on the horse. My wife did survive. So that's what works for me. My belief in God, Jesus, the Holy Spirit, all the guardian angels, all the Holy Family, all the saints that have come before me, all of that. All of the faith in that, my faith in that is what works for me. And I'm not going to rock the boat because the same thing happened to my mother. My father, she wasn't supposed to have any more children. But the birth of my second oldest sister almost killed her. So my father came back, he, 25-year retired master chief, radio man, World War II, Korea, Purple Heart recipient, worked in naval intelligence, met my mother in Brazil after the war. He was on his deathbed dying of spinal meningitis, cephalitis, and several other things that had there was no cure for them. And he was out of his mind trying to hurt himself and hurt people. So they had him strapped to this bed, and they called my mom up. And they said, if you want to see him alive again before morning, come now. So I don't know what she did with my sisters, gave him to a neighbor or something, called a cab because she didn't know how to drive. She's on the base and she's driving to the church. She makes the cab driver stop at this church on the base. She goes in there and she crawls on her hands and knees, did the same thing. That's how I learned. Crawled on her hands and knees all the way up to the altar, begged for God to spare her husband's life. Crawled on her way out, promised him that if you save my husband till I can't do it any longer, from now on, from every day I go to church, I'll do it on my hands and knees and I'll have another child because she wasn't going to have any more kids. She went back to the church, to the hospital. My dad wakes up that morning. He's totally normal. Everybody freaks out. They do all these tests on him. They can't find any of the diseases anywhere in them any longer. It's still in the naval medical records as being, they wrote it off as a miracle. My mother kept her bargain until she was too old and physically unable to do it any longer. When she went to church, she did it on her hands and knees and she had another kid. Ta-da! Yours truly. And she would tease me growing up that I was her miracle baby, and I used to embarrass me. But this is what I commented on in the green room before we went live, was this is all in the works long before I was even born.
Wait. Now we're going to jump in because we have 10 minutes left and I got to get to some hard questions. Those were the easy ones. you just said something. We're going to shorten it up a little bit because I want to get my questions in. You said just now, this was in the works before you were born. What does that mean?
I believe you and I and Julia sitting here talking, me being about to be ordained into a Catholic priest and all the things that I've gone through, I believe when my mother made that promise to have another child, the decision was made then. You are going to have another child, and he's going to be here on March 4th, 2024, talking to Julia and Phil Syracusa on the Horsefly Chronicles radio show, telling this story.
So then that would be an act of a soul contract, correct?
I don't know what you want to label that as. I don't like to tell people to make a deal with God. I don't know if that's what my mother did.
Well, some of it, you know, the reason I'm bringing that up, because I want to get to my questions, is some of that theory and information that you're letting out is that if it already was planned before a person is born, which I do agree with you, by the way, it's sort of what we would say, or I would say, is a soul contract, which is kind of like you don't remember writing what you want to experience on the physical realm. You write it out, you go through life, you go through your journey and your puzzle, whether it's long or short-lived, and when it's complete, you go back home to see that the journey that you've assigned yourself as a soul was completed. And the question now that people are going to ask me after the show, because I will get, we have a lot of this atheist out there. The world is broken, okay? It's broken. There's a lot of sadness in the world. In fact, if we wake up every day and don't take it for granted, because we're on the verge of a major nuclear war, we're at these times where it's scary right now. The world is unpostured, uncensored in a way that it's never, ever been. And a person's going to ask me after the show, if faith of mankind helps heal and God answers the prayers of a person who is sick, then why doesn't God answer the prayers of a five-year-old who does not know how to pray, who is blind, that is dying of cancer? And your answer would be?
My answer would be, I don't have the answer to that. I do know that sometimes God allows certain things to happen so that people like us can witness the power of God. But things, you know, God doesn't think like us and we don't think like him. So we can't really put an answer to that or explain that because, you know, we're talking about, you know, the supreme being, the creator. What he doesn't think like us. What he's thinking and what he's doing is we can't comprehend. We just can't do it.
Right. I agree with you. So in all fairness, in St. Jude Hospital, where all the kids are dying of cancer or blindness and sickness, and some of them will never be healed. They don't know how to pray. Some of them are mutes. They can't speak. And an atheist will come forward and say, where's your God? Where is your God now? Why should all the innocent children, innocent from families of religious backgrounds, some of them, why are they dying? You know, Sean, I don't disrespect religion. I ask these questions only because I get asked these questions, you know? And you did say something that made a lot of sense. You said that whatever you believe, it's the power of you that believes it, no matter what it is. And that power of the higher interdimensional being that we call God, the God particle, that vibration that comes down through us to help us and heal others. While for some reason, we don't understand why the innocence of the young are taken away through acts of war and crime and murder. I mean, turn on the news and you'll turn it back off in 5 minutes. It's horrible. Innocent children are being slaughtered every day. And you ask, where is your God? Where is he? And why? Why do families have to be broken? And as a paranormal investigator and living in a haunted house and in interviewing my wife and I, people around the world of all forms of religion, it seems to just make sense to me that somewhere along these lines, there are soul contracts where reincarnation has taken place in formats that we don't want to go past a certain age. We want to hit the exit button, for example, on a journey at 5 years old, or 10, or 50, or 100. Maybe some of us haven't experienced what others have, and we don't want to experience that again. It's something where I'm trying to grasp, because there is also the belief, as we in the United States and in our culture, we say death. Some cultures don't believe in death. They don't. They believe, in fact, it's the celebration of the new beginning. And that you leave like a leased vehicle, you're leaving the shell. You're leaving the leased vehicle and you're going on now to another dimension of vibration of you. I like what you're doing. And if it helps, because I can feel your words, right? And if it helps you, and it helps your wife and your family, then it works. It's the tool that works. And that what works is belief. And if you have that belief strong enough, then no one can doubt what you believe. And I respect that.
Thank you, brother. You guys have been through it too. You know, I even go further back. I know we're short on time, but you know, my father, he was a God-fearing man, but he wasn't a baptized Catholic or even a Christian, you know, and here he is in World War II, and he hadn't met my mother yet, and he was sunk on a ship, and he was floating around on a piece of wood for 24 hours, ingesting oil and gasoline and God knows whatever else was on top of this water, so he's violently ill, hanging onto this piece of wood, and there was nobody that was going to come and save them. And the true hero is this one captain that disregarded orders not to go back because there was so much enemy in the water in that area. They went back for survivors. He was too weak to get up to even swim to the ship. So they got whatever survivors were left out of the water, and they were about to take off. He heard the loudspeaker prepare to get underway, and he saw a piece of rope laying in the water. And he started wrapping the rope all around himself. He figured, well, they're going to drag me back dead, but I'm not going to be left here. He actually remembers getting pulled through the water a little bit. And he heard a deep voice say, there's one more over the side. And he recalls looking up, and this big muscular sailor jumped over the side of the ship. And while hanging on with one arm, grabbed him, probably by the seat of his pants, I'm assuming, and just tossed him onto the deck. Where he landed, he passed out for probably 48 hours. And when he woke up, he had this little tent over him and corpsmen working on him and stuff. When he was good enough to get to his feet, he scoured that ship to find this sailor to thank him for saving his life. Not only did nobody know who this sailor was, but nobody even remembered that situation. It was like one second my dad wasn't there. The next second, people said, we just saw him laying on the deck. So he was convinced that was a guardian angel that saved his life. And and he told us this story many times, and that stuck with him his whole life. And this is where I'm still going further back. I mean, I'm thinking even at the time, at that moment, I was already in the works.
Wow.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. This has been, it went fast, right, Joel? The hour went really quick because, I mean, I could just go on for another hour. If I really have a lot more questions, but unfortunately, we're done. Where can people find you? And again, thank you so much. Where can people find you, and what do you have going on?
My website is www.ghost-be-gone.biz. You can also find me at the United States Old Catholic Church. Society of Saint Benedict. I'm also going to take my permanent vows as a old Catholic Benedictine of Immaculate Mary. So I'll be a full-fledged brother Benedictine. So people can reach me there. And you mentioned Saint Jude's. If you go to my website and anything you purchase on there, including the books, part of the proceeds of every sale of every copy of my books goes to support stjude.org.
Awesome.
And the ASPCA.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You guys got to come on my show.
Yes. Let's go.
I'll reach out to you when I get back from my trip next weekend, get you guys on my show, and I'll come back anytime you guys want to finish the rest of your questions.
Let's do it. Thank you so much, Joel. You're a great person. Thank you.
God bless you both.
Shout out to the people in the chat. Cindy, Diane, there's a couple people in there that I can't see. Facebook user, you got to give StreamYard permission to see your name, but thank you for joining us tonight. It's been an amazing show. Thank you, Sean, for coming on tonight.
Thank you, Julie, for inviting me. God bless you both. I love you both. God bless you both.
Thank you so much. Thank you to Carnation for sponsoring the show. We love them. And please join us next Monday night on the United Public Radio Network on 105.3 FM and 107.7 FM from New Orleans. Thank you again, and have a great night. Thank you, Sean.
You're welcome. God bless you both.
God bless you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.